to hopefully be starting to promote health rather than eliminating disease or eliminating conditions or eliminating deaths. And I think that that's why this the GHI, to me in particular, is so exciting, is that we're really starting to talk about health as a principle rather than specific individual things, no matter that our appropriations are still focused on those. I think we're all very much programmatically trying to really pull things together. That was just a bit of an aside, sorry. But comment on Anne. Anne's great talk. But I want to introduce our next speaker, John Donnelly, and who is great to have him with us and giving another perspective. John, as many of you know, is a writer. He's based here in D.C. and he specializes in global health. He's the vice president and senior editor of Burness Communications, and he also founded Longtail Media, which is now telling stories about the well-being of people all over the world. Many of you likely know John because he was a newspaper journalist for 25 years, and he was Africa-based correspondent for the Boston Globe and has written terrific and really important stories about global health that promote the work that all of us are engaged in and also talk about the issues. He's been a great ally of the global health community. And with that, sorry, let me just introduce one other piece. So John has actually traveled around to some of the GHI focus countries, the very first ones, and done some terrific stories, which are posted on globalpost.com, which some really good reviews of sort of where is the GHI today, how is it being implemented, etc. And he's going to share some of those stories with us this morning. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Donna. It's odd that a week ago I was moderating a panel where Donna was on, and now we flip the. Let me step back just one second, just to give you some context to some of the reporting that we did for Global Post. About a year and a half ago, the Kaiser Family Foundation asked myself and another writer, Nellie Bristol, to actually look at the future of global health journalism. And so we went out and we interviewed 50 journalists who cover global health. And we found some things that probably wouldn't surprise you. One was that mainstream journalism coverage of global health was really going way down. I'm a good example of that. I left the Boston Globe, but many other people also left their jobs because there just wasn't enough financial support to put into global health coverage. We also found, though, a rise of advocacy journalism. So there are a number of groups, number of NGOs, who were putting out their own content. And we found a rise of these fledgling news organizations. They were just starting out. You didn't know what their future was. They didn't have actually much credibility yet, but they could actually grow into be major players in the field. And the last thing we found was that almost no one is covering global health policy. It's just reporters that we talked to found it deathly dull, and it was really hard for any of them, even though that they were interested in the GHI, it was really hard for any of them to, number one, get the funding to go overseas to cover it, and number two, to convince their editors that they should do policy stories out of Washington. So from that, Kaiser decided to actually give some money to one organization, Global Post, scandalously low amount of money, and they asked me to come in and help oversee some of it, to do some stories and to edit it, and we ended up doing two overview pieces that looked at where GHI was 2 years into it. So now we're 2.5 years into it. So we started, we did some pieces, and then we did 5 country reports, and we decided that we would cover a broad range of things. We wanted to look from Guatemala, the tiny Guatemala's program with $13 million, all the way up to Kenya, which had $600 million, and was heavily, heavily an HIV program. So we wanted to see over a whole range of things what was happening. And so one other context before we get to the field. The other context is that GHI started with a lot of missteps. And there were two huge missteps, I think. The first one was that internally, it gathered almost no support for it. Hillary Clinton learned 12 hours before the announcement in 2009 that there was going to be a GHI. So internally, it was a process in the first year of really building up support. How is this going to happen? Who is going to oversee it? And so it became a three-headed troika for a long time. The second problem was that there was very little effort put in the first year or two in getting political support in Congress. PEPFAR had built up this incredible large bed of odd bedfellows. And so it took in from the far right, the Christian right, all the way to the most liberal members of Congress. And they all agreed that the U.S. government should be funding this. So GHI comes on top of that, and a lot of the Republicans especially who were supporting it, even some of the Democrats, were saying, why are we switching? What are the goals going to be? And so the outcome of that was that a number of the rules that were in place for PEPFAR continued into GHI. So things like just sort of use of the AIDS money, for instance, a lot of that, you know, is incredibly important for GHI to have some flexibility in using that money. Well, a lot of the congressional controls about how the money is spent are still in place. So GHI has to be very creative in terms of how it finds integration, how it moves things, and maybe Kimmy can talk about that later. So we went to the last year, so I've been to about 6 of the 8 GHI plus countries. And I found 2 things. One was confusion. The confusion was not so much among the U.S. government teams, but among the partners. What is GHI? You know, how do you define it? Is the program that I'm doing now, is it GHI or is it HIV? And how do I then move from my HIV program into doing more for GHI? How do I get involved? So even among some of the media providers, there was some confusion. The other thing that we found was that progress is really uneven. Not surprising, actually. This happened a lot, definitely happens a lot in PEPFAR, happens a lot with all foreign aid, that some countries, because of the combination of incredibly skilled people on the ground or people who aren't really bought into the program, that the advances would be up and down. So we found some places that that I thought were just going gangbusters, and then some places that were a bit disconnected from some of the principles of GHI. So just a couple of points about that, just about some of the things that we covered. And to cover this was actually a challenge, too, because the question, the journalists, as you know, look for points of tension. And we look for where there could be conflict, and what does that conflict say about the program as a whole? But we also look, I think, in something like this. To be fair, we try to look at the whole thing, and so we were sort of directing these 5 reporters with various degrees of experience, and sending them out, we sort of decided to look at different things. So we looked at some points of tension, like what does the lack of funding for abortion, U.S. government funding for abortion services, mean to family planning in Nepal? Okay, so good question. So we looked at that. We looked at another question in Guatemala. How do you take $13 million, which is tiny, tiny, tiny in the aid world, and how do you really attack a problem like chronic malnutrition? We looked at family planning services in Malawi. We looked at AIDS program in Kenya, where $550 million of the $600 million program is coming from PEPFAR. How do you then take a platform like that and actually make it a GHI platform? It's incredibly difficult. Kenya actually, and we were just there just two, three weeks ago, Kenya is actually probably has the potential for being one of the best stories of GHI. And that's because of actually, under previous country, U.S. government leadership, had really expanded what the PEPFAR program was, so that it was already looking for integration two or three, 4 years ago, before GHI began. So it had adopted some of the principles. So it was a really mixed bag. The other point of tension that we look for, and Chris talked about this earlier, was on country ownership. So country ownership, which I find is obviously incredibly important for sustainability of these programs. And in Rwanda, we talked to the health minister in Rwanda, Agnes Binyawahu, and she said, actually, that a main focus of GHI she had never heard about, that before when it started, that she was not consulted. And I don't want to take that out of context. I think what that says is that in rolling out a program that has constraints, legislative constraints here, that has funding constraints here, there's going to be problems that you can find different places. So the key is, I think, in sort of moving ahead and looking at GHI, are a couple of things. One is, and these would be, I think my perspective is obviously from communications and telling stories and everything, so it's probably different from other folks on the panel, but I think what I see in the field is that things succeed when the relationships are strong, and when there's relationships between the U.S. government and partners, especially the governments and the NGOs in the country, when those things are working well, that there are advances. The two other things I would say that I would look at to see whether GHI can garner more funding and garner more political support here. One is, how good is the monitoring and evaluation of these programs? I think there has to be some incredible monitoring and evaluation in the short term for the political reasons, but obviously it has to incorporate ways of making sure that any successes in the short term are not done at the expense of a long-term result. And the third thing is, do you have storytellers? Do you have people in these countries, not just the U.S. government, but do you have people in the ministries of health, in NGOs that are representing populations that are marginalized? Do you have people actually speaking up for GHI? And do they have credible stories? So I think those things coming up, the relationships, the monitoring evaluation, the stories will sort of really tell you what will the future of this initiative will be in the next couple of years. Thanks.
Thanks, John. We just had a lot of really interesting, insightful, and I think broad coverage of this Global Health Initiative that hopefully has generated a lot of interesting questions and ideas, comments. I think I would also be interested in hearing if we have some folks here from the field. Any of your perspectives as to whether or not you've been engaged in any of the GHI programming, planning, etc. I think that this, I'm trying to speak on behalf of the panel, that all of us would actually be interested in hearing some of the perspectives from that. So we'll go ahead, I think we'll go ahead and take one question at a time unless it seems like they are... that doesn't make sense, but I mean, if you want to direct it to a particular person, please go ahead and say that. And then lastly, please introduce yourself and where you're from. And if you're going to ask a question and you're in the very back row, I'm going to ask you to come up front at least halfway so that we can all hear you. Okay? We don't have any mics. All right. Thanks. Go ahead.
Who are you? Sorry?
Can you introduce yourself?
Evaluation, not only for outcome monitoring evaluation, but for those feedback that is informative evaluation. everybody hear that? Did everybody hear the question?
Okay, we may actually, because the room is so large, have to have folks come up here or really shout them out. But the question is, I'm going to very succinctly repeat it, which I shouldn't say that, right? Is that a compliment to myself? sorry. It was focused on... It was focused on whether or not we're using M&E, not just for outcomes evaluation, but also for feedback loop and really trying to measure how the progress of things as they're going along and trying to make them better as the programs are going along. So I'm not sure, Catherine, do you want to take that first? Or?
Sure, I can start. A couple things on that. First of all, for our GHI Plus countries, the first 8 countries, we have what we call the learning agenda, which you can read many details about on our website. But essentially what it is exactly that. It's taking the outcomes, looking at the results, looking at the M&E for the HIV programs and the maternal child health programs, other things we're doing under the GHS strategy, and thinking about the best practices and then feeding it back in. So, for example, Nepal has recently approved its learning agenda strategy, and it's focused in on what results it's looking at, and then how to feed them back in to give the input to our major partners